To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. You can find my stuff online at MikeLuoma.com, that's MikeLuoma.com, or at GlowInTheDarkRadio.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, afterthere.com/MikeLuoma. We have a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page too, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. I invite you to get into our mailing list as well. You can do that at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, or in the sidebar on the blog or on the Facebook page. When you sign up for the mailing list, you get an exclusive publication you can't get otherwise. It's an anthology called The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It's got an Alibi Jones short story you can't find anywhere else, samples of some of the comic books, also has the Vatican Assassin graphic novel, an excerpt from the graphic novel in there, and part of the Vatican Assassin Index as well, with a history of the future giving you some background for the Vatican Assassin trilogy and the Alibi Jones universe. We've got Alibi Jones, Chapter 19, Part 2. And Chapter 20, The End of the Novel, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio today. When we last left Alibi Jones, he was about to get the top of his head taken off. Azimut had his saw at ready, and we'll see if he gets to use it when we get into Part 2 of Chapter 19 of the original novel, Alibi Jones. And we'll hear Chapter 20, the final chapter, as we wrap up the novel, Alibi Jones, on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Our news is all Alibi Jones based. The new audiobook of Alibi Jones should be available via Audible pretty soon, if all goes well. The files were uploaded earlier this week. They have to be checked out by Audible's quality control people and be okayed before they go live. So it's in their hands now. I've been editing these when I could for over a year to make them sound better. You've been hearing the results on this podcast. I'll let you know on the show when they're ready, and you can join my mailing list to find out more, too. So the new Alibi Jones audiobook is on the way on Amazon and Audible.com. With the novel drawing to a close on the podcast, I wanted to thank you for listening to this, the first adventure of Alibi Jones. I'm hoping you've enjoyed it enough to spread the word about the book. And maybe even enough to support more adventures of Alibi Jones by buying a book. Now, I'm putting these adventures out for free on my podcast with no expectation of reward. But I still hope my stories are entertaining enough to maybe motivate you to put a copy on your shelf, whether virtual or in real life. You can pick up the ebook of Alibi Jones free in iTunes Books, iBooks, or whatever Apple's calling their ebook section now. You can get it for free at Barnes & Noble, too. It'll cost you 99 cents at Amazon. For some reason, they're not lowering it to free, but there you go. If you go to glowinthedarkradio.com, you can find all of my Alibi Jones stuff on one page. Under Books, on the top menu, just click Alibi Jones. You'll find the paperback at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu.com. It's also at all the other Amazons, you know, Amazon UK and otherwise. You can find a special hardcover edition at Lulu, lulu.com. I don't advertise the hardcover much because it's kind of pricey. It's about 25 bucks, and it's only available through Lulu. But I'll put a link to it, the hardcover, in the show notes in case you'd like to get a copy. It's 10% off right now, so minus 250, it's $22.49. And it does look nice on the shelf. That all reminds me, too, Podiobooks.com is no longer its own separate site. It's now merged with Scribble.com. The links all work, but when you click on a Podiobooks link, it now goes to Scribble. You can listen to the Alibi Jones audiobook for free through Scribble and Podiobooks as a free podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or other sites. It's all through them. But now, this will be the old version. The newly edited version, fresh audio files, are only going to be available on Audible or through the recent episodes of this podcast. So, what's next for Alibi Jones after this adventure? I'll talk more about that after we finish the novel. After all, we're not sure yet if he's going to lose his head, or at least the top of it. So find out if Alibi Jones survives coming up next in Chapter 19, Part 2, and Chapter 20, the end of the novel, Alibi Jones. It's next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
The Flesh Pulp Podcast. 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you thrice weekly. 200 miles below the surface of the earth, at the terminus of a series of long-sealed caverns and interconnected shines, under the shadow of the eternally bleeding eye, there is a crippled wreck of a man writing tales, stories of a dimension engulfed in madness. He is writing them of you. Find them all at fleshpulp.com or search for it on iTunes.
Now here's Chapter 19, Part 2 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio. The sound of the saw grows louder and higher in pitch as Azamet prepares to slice through Alibi's skull.
Will I feel it as he starts cutting?
Alibi closes his eyes. It doesn't help. He can still hear the saw. Then he hears something else.
Pshaw! Bam!
A loud explosion of thunder drowns out the sound of the saw.
What was that?
Azamet shouts out the question.
Kacha!
Azamet yells at the Eldred.
The Tektar report engaging ships in orbit,
an Eldred informs Azamet.
It appears other ships have broken past their defenses. Those ships are approaching this installation. Our Eldred ships are attempting to stop them.
The saw grinds to silence as it's turned off. On the very edge of his vision, Alibi sees Azamet call the Tektar.
We have engaged Solar Alliance forces, Azamet. We are running interference to prevent them from landing,
the Tektar informs him.
They are already landing, you idiot!
Azamet yells at the Tektar.
We are outnumbered and under heavy fire, Azamet. We will hold out for you while we can, but I am afraid that will not be for much longer,
the Tektar tells Azamet.
Kaboom!
The ground shakes.
Katar, report!
Azamet commands a nearby Eldred.
A safe ship has landed inside the installation. It appears a Dakur cruiser has landed as well. We are moving to engage forces now, sir,
the Eldred tells Azamet.
Take 2 other servants and begin routing all power to my machine. I want it up and running, now!
Yes, sir.
Azamet reappears in Alibi's sight. He draws a pistol from his belt. Azamet points the gun at Alibi's head. Alibi tries to think hard at Azamet.
What are you doing? Going ahead in time? Running away?
If I must, Azamet answers his unspoken question. It is a contingency plan, yet again. A wise man makes sure all of his options are ready, open and available. I always give myself the opportunity to jump ahead in time into another body, should I need to.
Into what body? Mine?
Do not flatter yourself,
Azamet says with a laugh.
I have no desire to inhabit one of your race's forms ever again. So limited human flesh. No, I have created other bodies. Bodies like this one I am in now. Not perfect, but better than yours. Unfortunately, it is much shorter lived, so I continue to perfect the form. That is what I have been trying to do, trying to extract traces of our DNA from your human DNA, retrieving our markers from your polluted streams, to grow proper forms, proper bodies for us to reside inside. I've extracted some very interesting DNA from you, Alibi Jones. Your blood has helped me immensely. Your biology will actually help my next batch of forms grow stronger, last longer. I have other bodies ready in other places like this one, other servants at work in other laboratories. And thanks in part to you, I will soon once again live in a true body of the race. It appears now is not the time for surgery, however. I will have to settle for what I have already harvested from you. I am tempted to take you with me, keep you alive for further study. But you are too dangerous. I have your DNA, but I no longer have any use for you. Not anymore.
Azumet brings the gun up next to Alibi's head. Alibi can feel the cold barrel tickle the back of his ear. Alibi is blinded by a flash of red light.
Am I dead?
He can smell burnt flesh. He's awake and alive.
Ah!
Azumet curses. Alibi blinks. He sees Azumet cradling a burnt stump where his right hand used to be.
Someone shot the gun out of Azumet's hand.
Something else occurs to Alibi. He can feel his toes moving. The muscle relaxant may be starting to wear off. He tries to move his fingers, or his head. His head shifts slightly, and he can see safe troopers across the lab, shooting in his direction. Alibi spots Kit among the troopers in the doorway.
The Tektar ships in orbit have surrendered, sir,
and Eldred reports to Azumet, standing next to Alibi.
They have been disabled. One of our Eldred ships has been destroyed. The other fights on.
Tell the other Eldred ship to retreat and await further orders at one of our emergency rendezvous points.
Azumet yells another command out to the Eldred, but Alibi can't understand his words. They stop fighting. Azumet holds up both of his arms, his good one and his smoking stump. He calls to Kit and the safe troopers.
We give up! Don't shoot! I give up!
The troopers come up on Azumet quickly, guns trained. Kit approaches and sees Alibi stretched out and wired up on the gurney.
Alibi?
Kit wonders. Then he realizes it is his friend.
Alibi!
He turns to Azumet.
What have you done to him?
Nothing,
Azumet answers.
Muscle relaxant. You rudely interrupted my brain surgery before it could get started.
Azumet looks around the laboratory. Alibi wonders where the machine is revving up. It has to be somewhere nearby.
I wish I could tell Kit and the safe troopers about the machine.
Alibi tries to talk, but his mouth just won't move. Azumet shoots a look at Alibi. When he sees that Alibi is still paralyzed, he smiles.
Ba-whoop, ba-whoop, ba-whoop!
The comm alarm of one of the safe troopers goes off.
Oh, we've got a shitload of Tektar ships showing upstairs,
the safe officer tells Kit. Azumet grins.
No, wait!
The trooper sounds hopeful.
They say, they're not Tektar!
The screens around them, on every piece of equipment, flicker to life. What looks like a Tektar appears.
We are broadcasting in all languages, on all known communication frequencies.
A voice begins, a slithering tongue translated simultaneously.
We are the Sarta of the Greater Ta. We have assumed the responsibility for the Tektar and all their territories, as they have once again violated the terms of the Greater Ta. Our friends the Dakur brought this to our attention. For this, we thank them. As the administrators of the territories of the Greater Ta, we will soon be in communication with the Solar Alliance to discuss terms of annexation and other territorial concerns. All Tektar ships are now hereby declared to be under the control of the Sarta. Any ships continuing to operate as Tektar ships are therefore renegades and can be destroyed upon contact without fear of retribution by the Greater Ta.
With that, the screens go blank.
Shit!
The officer among the safe troopers exclaims,
Where'd he go?
Azumet disappeared while they were listening to the Sarta. Kit and Alibi hear the same sound they remember from back on the planetoid, a humming drone like a billion bees rubbing their wings together.
Azumet has turned on his machine.
The hair rises up off the skin of the humans and aliens as electric tension crackles around them. Static energy fills the air and then is just as suddenly gone. Nearly frozen by the ozone, the safe troopers shake off the effects and begin scrambling, looking for Azumet as the energy subsides.
Over here! One calls out. He's inside some kind of tank or something! Don't touch it!
The safe officer orders. Alibi can feel his fingers and toes when he wiggles them. He also feels sort of high. Something in the muscle relaxant, probably. The tubes in his throat begin to choke him as he realizes he can feel them, too. He tries to move, but still can't do more than twitch a little. Kit seems to understand as he comes back over to Alibi.
How are you?
The Catman asks him. Alibi tries to answer, but only manages muffled moans past the tubing.
I am going to risk taking these things out of you, Kit says,
and he tries to gingerly pull the tubes out of Alibi's throat. Alibi chokes as they come out, coughing up phlegm and gasping for breath. Kit backs away from the table. Tubes out, Alibi tries to breathe. Finally, he manages to whisper a couple of words.
Thank you,
Alibi says softly. He tries to move, leaning up onto one side. The movement makes him cough again. He hacks up more mucus, spits on the ground next to the gurney. Kit deftly avoids getting mucked on.
You are welcome. Nice haircut, Kit jokes.
You are also quite red. Is that right? Probably not, Alibi manages.
Maybe it's my metabolism churning to burn that shit out of my system.
Alibi tries to sit up. Sensor wires cling to his chest and hold him back. A little more effort from him and two of the sensors rip off his skin, setting him free.
Ouch!
Alibi barks. He pulls the rest of the sensors off with a sweep of his half-numb right arm and swings his legs over the side of the operating table, trying to stand up. Alibi's legs are apparently made of licorice. They fold up under him and he falls to the floor. Kit tries to help him back up. Alibi attempts to get his legs to hold him, leaning on the nearby table for support. Damn! He paralyzed me with some drug, Kit! This sucks! Alibi tries to say, but the words slur out mangled from his barely functioning mouth. He tries willing his legs to work.
It's everything we feared and more, buddy, he tells Kit, words growing clearer. This guy Azamet is one of them. He's one of the ancient enemy. These machines of his move him forward in time, into bodies he's growing. And he made it sound like there are more of them on the way.
Well, at least the Tekta will no longer be supporting him, Kit says. Not officially, anyway. And I do not believe the Greater Ta will abide his presence in their expanses.
Maybe, maybe not. Don't really know the Sarta, Alibi notes.
The Dakur have had many dealings with them, Kit says. We have found them to be honest and honorable. The Greater Ta is much different than the Tekta.
That'll be a refreshing change, Alibi says. He pushes off the table and tries to stand. He stays up, although he's unsteady. A safe officer approaches.
Alibi Jones?
I'm Alibi Jones, he replies.
I guess you are in charge here, the safe officer tells him.
Sir?
Oh?
Yes, sir. According to my orders from Safe Command, you're the man. We're mopping up now. We rounded up all the little fuzzy guys that were running around. But it's the damnedest thing, sir. As soon as we get them in captivity, they fade from their blue color to gray. And then they die. Don't know if any of them will be left alive.
Would have been nice to bring a living one with us.
We'll bring the bodies back, then. I'm sure the project will want to examine them, Alibi says.
Yes, sir. We're doing that. That's what Mr. Kit told us to do.
Alibi looks over at Kit appreciatively. He nods.
It was why we came out here, Kit points out.
Thank you, Alibi replies. He tries walking, tests his balance and the strength of his legs. Where's Azumet's machine? He asks Kit.
Over there, Kit answers him,
pointing across the lab. He turns and leads the way. Alibi follows slowly behind him. This machine looks different from the one they saw on the planetoid, more spread out. Like a Kit version, Alibi says.
A what? A like-me version? Kit asks.
No, like built from a Kit, prefab. It's all spread out, and look, no door, Alibi notes, pointing at the square transparent tank in front of them. The tank is made out of four large, flat, rectangular clear panels sealed down their long edges. Azamet evidently climbed a small scaffolding and lowered himself down into the tank. Now the body that had been occupied by Azumet's consciousness lies on the floor of the glass tank, its face mushed up against the glass, drooling. Officer, Alibi calls over to the safe trooper, let's be sure we bring this poor thing back with us too. I'm sure the project will want to study him. Just a big brain-dead baby at this point, Alibi says. He's not Azumet anymore. Azumet got away.
Maybe he missed his target, Kit offers. Blasted himself off into space.
That would be nice, but he's not stupid, Alibi answers. Besides, I think he'd still find his way into somebody. Somebody? The way he did with Masakov originally. If I understand Krish, that's what happened, somewhere out there in deep space.
Yes, you have a point, Kit agrees. He had no target when he came a million years into the future. I do not believe he would have deliberately chosen Dmitri Masakov.
I wonder how long he's been here, Alibi muses.
We can probably assume it was sometime after the last war and the death of the Eldred, or else the Eldred would not have died out, Kit deduces.
He looks around the lab.
This situation appears to be under control.
Kit makes to leave.
Alibi, it is good to see you in one piece, even if you do look strange without your hair, and with blue paint on your head.
Thanks, Kit. You're leaving?
I am. I must get the ship I borrowed back to the Dakur homeworld. I called in a bit of a favor, but I will see you soon.
Oh, really? How's that?
Your Aunt Anita promised me dinner if I rescued you, Kit explains. I do plan on collecting my reward. The Catman hisses laughter. I called her when I got away. She provided the safe squadron.
Good old Aunt Anita. Well, thanks to you both, I got to keep my head, Alibi says with a smile. He touches his now-shaved scalp and pulls his fingers away wet. Huh, still wet. His fingertips are covered with blue paint. So, Kit, see you back on Ceres Central?
You will, indeed. Until then, be well, Alibi, Kit says.
He turns and heads off across the lab and out the door. Trooper, could you help me? He calls over to the safe officer. The officer comes to Alibi's aid and helps him limp out towards a waiting safe ship. You should have seen all those Sata ships, the safe officer says to Alibi as he helps him along. There were more on the tactical display than I could count. We were way outnumbered when they first arrived, and we thought they were Tekta. I thought we were toast. They made short work of the two Tekta that were in orbit. They were already disabled, but the Sartar just blew them away. No kidding around.
I didn't realize they'd destroyed those Tekta ships, Alibi admits.
Oh yeah, the safe officer exclaims. Speaking of ships, did you see the one your Catman friend came in?
I didn't, no.
Pretty damn sweet. Don't get to see very many Dakur Imperial Elite cruisers. They don't come out our way, you know. Thought those were just used by their royal family. But I could be wrong. We don't really know that much about the Dakur, do we?
I guess maybe we don't.
No, we really don't know that much, Alibi agrees with the man.
And I seem to know less and less about the one Dakur I thought I knew.
Well, glad we could get you out in one piece, Mr. Jones, the trooper says as they reach a safe ship.
Thank you, officer. Thank you very much.
Alibi limps onto the bridge of the Stinger ship for what he hopes is an uneventful trip back to Ceres Central.
That was part 2 of chapter 19. This is chapter 20 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Kit arrives in his personal transport ship for the dinner at Anita's.
And she thinks I have a very good chance of pleading self-defense. Maybe even temporary insanity, brought on by being captured, stalked, hunted, and locked away in a box, Katie says to Alibi over salad.
Sounds like a good case, Alibi agrees.
Sounds like I have walked in on an interesting conversation, Kit observes as he enters the dining area.
Kit, good to see you, Alibi greets him, standing up.
Welcome, Kit. Glad you could come, Anita says.
Hi, Kit,
Katie chimes in.
I was just telling Anita and Alibi about the plea my lawyer is working on. She thinks I might be able to get just probation.
That is good news, Katie, Kit agrees.
My trial is set for 5.5 months from now, Katie tells Kit.
Did you take the Imperial Elite Cruiser this time? Alibi asks Kit.
Kit looks back at Alibi in silence for a moment before answering.
No.
Alibi?
Anita asks, using his name as a way of saying,
what is going on here? Are you making our guest uncomfortable for any good reason?
No, he answers her sheepishly.
When we Dakur go back to our ancestral homes, we often feel like young cublings again. I can see that your aunt did a fine job of raising you. You still respect her. Like a cubling, Kit says.
I'm not a cubling,
Alibi protests.
Right,
Katie and Anita say together.
Your women mock you, Kit notes.
We were fine until you got here, Alibi protests.
I convinced the Dakur we needed that ship, with the Sartar sure to appear, Kit says, explaining himself to Alibi.
Come, sit down, Kit, Anita says, getting up to pull out a chair for the Catman. The Sartar say they have good relations with your people?
She asks him, as he sits down at her table.
We do. The Dakur have always had good relations with the Sartar and the Greater Ta.
I will be frank with you, Kit. Their talk of annexation and territorial concerns worries me,
Anita admits to the Dakur.
You were negotiating with the Tekta, were you not? Over places such as that planetoid Alibi and I first found Azumet on.
And me, Katie interjects. I'm glad you guys found me. We had some back-channel discussions going on. Not much more, Anita says. The Tekta did not seem to understand the concept of negotiating.
Kit lets out a series of hisses.
No, they do not seem to get that. The alien agrees. The Sartar are a bit more refined in their concepts.
Their talk continues over dinner. Kit tells Anita more about the Sartar, mostly about how large and powerful the Greater Ta is. Alibi takes it all in as he eats.
Alibi, you've been quiet, his aunt notes as the meal winds down. Just eating, maybe thinking some too. What are you thinking about?
Kitty asks him. About how funny life is. How you can look at things from so many different points of view, Alibi says.
Deep thoughts? Kit asks.
Not really. Just something Piccolo said to me once. But his thoughts do run rather deep.
Life is all in how you look at it.
Alibi looks at his Aunt Anita, the woman who raised him, the woman who loves him like a mother. He looks over at Katie, the girl he thinks he might be in love with. At the very least, the girl he's sleeping with. He looks over at Kit, his new good friend, the Catman who has his back, who has saved his life at least twice now. Then he looks again at his Aunt Anita and sees a woman who is no relation to him, who was forced to raise him by circumstances beyond her control, and who hates it when she doesn't have control. Murder put him in her hands. He looks again at Katie and sees a murderer, a cold-blooded killer, a woman wanted as property by a ruthless crime lord, pure trouble. Does she love him, or is she merely hiding in his refuge? Murder drove her into his arms. He again considers Kit, this alien Dakur, who now sits at the same table, and yet refuses to answer any questions about who he is, except for when he tells Alibi he may have to kill him, honor and all that. They met and had to kill to escape the Tekta prison cell. Murder put him at Alibi's side.
Love and death tie them to me, tie us all together. But then again, really is all in how you look at it.
Alibi looks around the table again and smiles. The black of deep space out a nearby viewport then catches his eye, and he frowns. He feels like they won this round, but he's worried. It's not over. Somewhere out there, Azumet has entered, or will soon be entering, a new body. He has my DNA, for what that's worth. And in a dark laboratory, on an unnamed world, lightning begins crackling around the figure of a muscular man chained to the wall of the building. Tensing, straining against his chains, his back arches off the wall as if he's being electrocuted. Then he settles down, still for a moment. The man looks alert. He flexes his right arm and frees it from the manacle holding it. He does the same with his left, and then kicks his legs free of the chains that hold them in place. Now free, the figure steps out of the darkness and looks at himself in a nearby mirror. Azumet watches himself breathe deep, observes his first breath in his new form. Azumet laughs.
That was Chapter 20 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio. The end of the novel. And Azumet's laughing, not dead. Little bit of a cliffhanger at novel's end. Had to let you know there's more to come, didn't I? Well, there are many more adventures for Alibi Jones on the way. Some are out for you to read and listen to. Others are still in the works. With the audio editing, really re-editing, complete on this novel, Alibi Jones, I can finally use my free time on writing the next Alibi Jones novel, and I am. The Starseeds of Earth is starting to really shape up. felt some elements slide into their proper places in the narrative just this weekend. So that's what's in the works. But there's a lot of adventures before that, which you can enjoy now. The next novel picks up where this one leaves off, Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. There are some comic book stories set around these first two novels, too. Blind Eye takes place before the novel Alibi Jones. It's in The Adventures of Alibi Jones, issue number 1. And Vacation takes place just after Alibi Jones. The story is in The Adventures of Alibi Jones, number 2. And it takes place before Sunrise of Her. There's even the story In Over His Head, which takes place during the events in Sunrise of Her. Now, there is an Alibi Jones timeline on my website, but if you've only heard this first novel, you might want to wait on checking that out. It's under the Books tab at glowinthedarkradio.com if you're interested. But don't read too far ahead, or you'll find out more than you want to know. Thanks for listening to this novel. If you want to hear it from the beginning, just go back to episode 423 of Glow in the Dark Radio. That's all for this week. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.